Hello, OT friends, and welcome to the Uncommon OT series. I'm Patricia Motis, and I'm your host, a Filipina-American, native New Yorker, current California transplant, bulldog mama, and an uncommon occupational therapist myself for the past 22 years. On this podcast, you'll hear me proudly feature the unique careers of occupational therapy practitioners working in non-traditional and role-emerging practice areas, settings where OT is uncommon. I invite you to receive a dose of OT inspiration, to learn, to think outside of the box, and to be energized and motivated to follow in these unconventional paths. Happy listening. Before we begin this episode, I want to highlight and extend a special thanks to our sponsors, TrueLearn and PicMonic. PicMonic is an excellent learning resource and study aid for occupational therapy and occupational therapy assistant students, whether you're studying for your classes or getting ready for the NBCOT exam. PicMonic is the only visual mnemonic learning tool that has been research proven to increase retention and help students ace their exams through the use of audiovisual learning and intelligence-based repetition algorithms to help with long-term retention while studying. How I wish I had a learning tool like this back when I was in OT school. Try it for yourself and sign up today using the link in the show notes or code TRANSITIONSOT to score a discount of 20% off your PicMonic membership. Happy studying. So welcome back, everyone. I am super thrilled to introduce you to our guest of honor, Alondra Amon. Alondra is a first-generation Salvadorian Haitian-American from Maryland. Alondra learned to overcome adversity and strive despite the challenges of being raised alongside her seven siblings by her single parent, her mother, who immigrated from El Salvador. After high school, Alondra enlisted in the U.S. Air Force, working as a dental assistant and hygienist. During her time in the military, she discovered a passion for helping others in the healthcare field. She graduated with her BS in kinesiology from San Francisco State University and her master's in occupational therapy from Samuel Merritt University. During graduate school, Alondra served as the co-president for a student occupational therapy association and helped raise over $3,000 for local community outreach and the American Occupational Therapy Political Action Committee. Upon graduation, she was awarded the Outstanding Student Award and was selected to participate in the Emerging Leaders Development Program through the American Occupational Therapy Association. Currently, she is pursuing her PhD in occupational therapy at Texas Women's University and was recently awarded a graduate fellowship called Wu Mentoring, designed to support women in leadership and research. Her dissertation topic is centered around exploring how learning is influenced by racial ethnic biases towards students of color during their level 2 fieldwork. With an increased demand to diversify the profession, Alondra hopes to create equitable and inclusive resources to support the recruitment and retention of graduate students of color and bring more awareness to help mitigate health disparities. So without further ado, I'm super excited to introduce you and welcome to the podcast, Alondra Amon. Welcome, Alondra.
Thank you so much. As you're reading that, I'm like, I feel like you're talking about someone else. I'm like, wow, who is this person?
Girl, that was all you. Everything that you've done. Well, not everything that you've done. That's just some of the stuff of what you've done.
That's crazy.
We're going to hear more about the uncommon and incredible OT work that you're doing as we progress through the rest of the show. But before we get to all of that, I'd love for you to tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us a little bit about your background and perhaps some of your favorite occupations.
Yes. So a little bit about myself. So yes, I am originally from Maryland. I am one of 8 kids. I'm number 3 from the oldest. I grew up there and after high school went to the military and after that moved to Florida, did very non-traditional work there. I feel like I've always been non-traditional in many ways, just joining the military and some of the work that I've done. And then eventually found myself in California. So I've been out here for, let's say, 17 years. Yeah. And
Wow.
I have, it's my partner and I, and two boys, and our dog. And we just love it out here in the Bay Area. So it's very hard to beat the weather. But
Yes.
yeah, that's a little bit about me. I'm trying to think what else. I feel like I could go
Well,
on and on and on. I never know what to say.
thanks so much for sharing some of that with us. Can you tell us what motivated you to contribute to our podcast?
Oh my goodness. Anytime I get a chance to talk about occupational therapy, I'm already like, yes, please. But then, also getting to talk about my current area of practice and the work that I'm doing there. I mean, it's always an honor and a privilege. And I think it's just another form of advocating and advocacy and getting the word out there. So, and I love the work that you're doing. So it was a very easy yes.
Oh, thank you so much for spending the
Yeah.
time. I'm excited to hear more about your work. So this might be a great segue into that. Can you describe for us, the uncommon OT work that you do, the setting in which you practice, perhaps a little bit about the population that you serve and some of their needs?
Yeah, so currently I work at community-based mental health, and a lot of the work that we do is really helping individuals that have transitioned out of homelessness or being unhoused into permanent housing and really helping them with that housing stability and retention so that they can keep their housing and stay there. But we know that, not all of these individuals have or may have the necessary skills that are required to keep and maintain their house, right? They may have been unhoused for years. And when that's the case, the last thing you're thinking about is budgeting, right? It's survival. So as occupational therapists, we really come in there and support these individuals. And most of the individuals that we work with have some form of mental health diagnoses. And so helping them manage their symptoms as well. Is another area that we're really passionate and supportive with. And for me, I also work in the transitional housing program. And so these are individuals that are in the shelter and getting ready to transition into permanent housing. So it's a little bit different. And a lot of what I'm focusing on there is those life skills and just really thinking about the things that they may also have to be mindful of when moving into a new place and space, and how to acquire some of the things that they might need. So, resources, and the just different. I mean, it's just a range of skill sets. It's a range, but it's very like true OT, in my opinion.
Got it.
Yeah.
What is the name of the organization that you work with?
Yeah, so I work for the Mental Health Association in San Mateo County. Yeah, so there's community clients. And so these are individuals that live within the community. They've been housed and they're now out in the community. And then they have permanent resident housing or residential housing where the organization owns these properties and we have clients that live there. And then we have clients that are in a shelter. And also in the transitional housing. So we have a shelter on our property, and then also transitional housing is located there as well.
Got
So
it.
yeah,
Okay.
quite a few programs. And all of this is adults. They're all adults. So 18
Okay.
and up.
Great. So, as an OT, are you the only OT there, or are there a few others providing services for all of these programs?
Yeah, I feel very blessed as a as this is a nonprofit and the director is very passionate about occupational therapy and the work that we do. And so I get to work alongside four other OTs that are amazing. And I think it's really rare to have that many OTs in one organization doing community-based and mental health. So yeah, I feel pretty lucky.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
I've always functioned in nonprofits as the lone OT or the only
Yes.
OT or the spokesperson for OT. And I've always fantasized about having, fellow OT coworkers
Yeah.
alongside. I've always referred to the OT team. I always had a team because I always had interns, right? So
Right.
that was, that's what I had. But I always fantasized about perhaps having, another credentialed OT
Yeah.
there. So what a treat.
It
You
is.
must have some
It is
great
great.
meetings and fun
I mean,
collaboration sessions.
we were just talking about this the other day, is that we feel like our team is so cohesive, and we work very well, and we get to ask, we ask each other's questions, and just super supportive and very just, helpful, looking out for one another. So I think I feel pretty blessed to be able to work with a team of OTs.
Oh,
And it's
I'm so
a
glad.
range of backgrounds too. So it's just great. It's great. Yeah.
Well, I'm happy you have that sort of support and team at work, right? That's sometimes that can be a stressor at work. So it's nice to not have that
It can be,
sort of.
especially for me, right? Because I came from pediatrics. So transitioning from pediatrics to adult, and then not just adults, but mental health. It's you carry over some skill sets no matter what setting you're in, but this is newer territory for me. So it was great to have that support. It really is. And there's still things that I'm like, what do you guys think? Or can I pick your brain about this? And they're just super supportive and helpful. So it's really nice to enter a newer space and have a team of OTs, to kind of bounce ideas off of. So, yeah.
Yeah, I love that. So let's take a step back because I think I would love for our listeners to learn a little bit about the non-traditional work that you did before this one. And then we'll
Oh,
delve into this one. So
yes.
I mean, is that okay for you to
Yes, of
describe
course.
just a little bit, give us a little taste of what you did before, and then we'll segue into the now.
And another nonprofit. I guess, I really thought that I was going to be very traditional. But at least that's what I, thought that I was supposed to do. But I've never been traditional my whole life, so I don't know why I thought that. So my last job was at a nonprofit. It was an equine assisted therapy setting. So I was an occupational therapist integrating hippotherapy. So very non-traditional. And my primary population was, like, as I said, pediatrics. And yeah, the range of diagnoses, I mean, it was a huge spectrum from, like, autism to Down syndrome to rare genetic conditions and disorders. And it was just a wide range. But yes, very non-traditional. And there are definitely times where I'm like, man, I wish I could be outside today. It's such a beautiful day. I could be walking next to a horse right now. So I do miss that.
You don't do any of that anymore.
Not right now, no. I would love to eventually go back to working with horses, but integrating more of that mental health component.
Got it.
Yeah. So I would love to do
So,
something maybe with, like, adolescents or something.
yeah. Well, I guess, probably the question that everyone has on their minds right now is what made you segue into the type of work that you're currently doing from doing kind of a little bit more like nature-based animal-assisted therapy and then moving into community-based mental health?
Yeah, I mean, when I was a student and I did my level two field work, I had a rotation at a outpatient day, mental health day program for seniors. And I remember when I was taking classes, like during my didactic coursework, learning about, having psychosocial, and I just didn't get it. I didn't understand mental health, like our role in mental health. I'm like, how are we helping people? I don't get it. And then when I did that fieldwork rotation, it just, like, it clicked. It clicked. And I was just like, okay, we're not supposed to be, we don't fix anybody. You know, that's not what we're here to do. We're here to really help them apply, you know, learn new skills, apply skills, build on skills that they have so that they can carry out at, you know, their life. And I didn't really get that until I had that placement. And so even when I was working with pediatrics, I always kept the mental health aspect in mind. So whether it was mental health as it pertained to my client or mental health as it pertained to that of the caregivers, right? Because these parents go through a lot when you have a child that has different abilities and special needs. And so I just knew it was something that I always wanted to go back to. And I also wanted to try and switch up the population. I know that I'm good at working with children, but it was time for a change, I think. And also going back to school made me realize that a little bit as well. So being back in mental health is amazing. And then really getting being able to serve the community in which I live in. It's just a whole different level of like filling my cup, you know. So,
Well, thanks for sharing that. I don't know where to begin. There's a few different parts here that I think were just really important to make special mention. So I always talk about how we evolve as OTs, right? Certain
do.
times we're more passionate about certain things, and that may be reflected in our practice, right? And in your case, here you were working with children, doing something entirely different that you're equally passionate about today, right? And just using the same lens, right? So that is exactly what we want to portray here in this podcast, is how we can really function and apply our lens in a variety of settings and fill our cups in the ways that our cup needs to be filled.
I mean, it's kind of selfish on our part, but at the same time, we want to make sure that we're doing work that we love. Right. And so to be able to be in a position of serving others and helping others, you know, what better way to do that than with a population or individuals that genuinely need our care, our support, our help. So it makes me feel like I'm serving a purpose. I'm using my skill sets. I get to really pull in my therapeutic use of self. Like I really feel like I'm being intentional about the work that I'm doing. And I'm maximizing what I bring to the table. So it's just something that keeps me going and keeps me wanting to learn more and develop more skills. And yeah, I think that's part of what makes you evolve as a therapist as well. As you were saying, we just kind of evolve with the time, but yeah.
And I can't help but think that there's a few therapists out there listening who may be feeling the same way, right? And I think that's why this is such a great example. I think of all of these stories and conversations as, sort of little patterns, right? Patterns for other therapists to perhaps follow. So here you were working with kids, working some in an entirely different non-traditional setting. And then you paved your way into a community mental health OT position, doing still something uncommon. So can you share with us how that magic, how that happened? Because I think that's the big question. A lot of folks are doing that work maybe in pediatrics, right? And are thinking, okay, I kind of want to do something else, maybe something, with a nonprofit. How do we do that? How do we get there?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was really immersing myself in the area of interest. And so I would attend POTAC, which is I forget what it is. I feel like it's a psychiatric
Psychiatric.
association. Wait, Psychiatric Occupational Therapy Association of California.
That's right. I should know that
And
too.
you know, I just attend, I would attend their webinars and some of their webinars that they would have. And that's where I got to connect with other OTs that were working in mental health And that's actually how I met my coworker. And she's the one who introduced me to the Mental Health Association. And she's the reason why I work there now, you know. So it's really just about putting yourself out there, trying to learn a little bit more about what you're interested in, and just networking with other therapists that are in that area you might be interested in, asking questions, and seeing if it's something that you really want to do. And I think the net, I feel like I'm a natural researcher. That's probably why I went back to school for my PhD. But I'm always just like doing research and asking questions
Yes.
because I'm curious and I want to know. I have to know. So yeah, just immerse yourself and ask questions, and you'll find out if it's something that you want to do. And trust me, just by networking and asking questions, some door will magically open.
Absolutely.
I just feel
In
like that's how it
fact,
always happens.
I feel like if you don't, nothing happens, right? So it's sort of
Nothing
like the
happens.
inaction results in no action. So taking any action is always such a great advice. Thank you for that. And I love that that's, it's through networking. You got involved, right?
It really
You
is.
started introducing yourself to some folks and you started to make connections. And that's really what led you to this current position.
I mean, and networking really is a way to learn about not just what you're interested in, but sometimes you end up learning about other things you never even thought of.
Yes.
And you're like, whoa, I didn't know I could do that as well. And then you become interested in that. And it's just, I mean, it's just a really, really a great way to not only get to learn a little bit more about your peers and your colleagues, but also an area in which you might be in one day.
Yeah.
So,
Oh, such great advice. So let's segue into a typical day or a typical session, right, in your setting. What is it like? Can you describe for us and what the setting looks like? Are folks there? I know some of them are residential, and I know that there's a few different ones. So you can pick whichever
Oh,
program you want to talk about and the kinds of things that
goodness.
you
There's
do.
it's oh man, no day. I can tell you now that no day is the same. So there is no typical day. But I can tell, like, okay, so one recent story that I'd like to share, I think it would be really cool, is I have a client who I've been working with, and this client lives out in the community, and substance use or alcohol use is really challenging for this individual. And so managing their intake has been very hard and has sent this individual to hospitals numerous times. And so really trying to work with this individual in developing those skills has been challenging, right? Because how do you help someone who is inebriated, you know? So recently there's been a change, and now this individual is no longer drinking. And so it's like night and day, and being able to really focus on those occupational go therapy goals that they have has been wonderful. And so the most recent goal that this individual had was getting a haircut. And I've been working with this person for over 7 months now. So they've been wanting to get a haircut for over 7 months. So just grooming and hygiene, right? And finally I was able to do that. They also wanted to do some shopping, and I've never been able to do shopping with this person either. And they made a checklist of all the things that they wanted to get shop, you know, get on their shopping trip. And so we were able to go shopping, we were able to get a haircut, and I was able as an OT to just kind of help facilitate and guide and try to educate a little bit on, you know, the shopping experience, but then also the haircut experience and the grooming. And when you were done for the day, the first thing that they said was like, oh, now I have to get my teeth fixed. because I have to, you know, so that self-awareness and wanting to better, you know, their hygiene and their overall health. It was great. It's really great. So OT sessions can be out in the community, literally out in the community, or within the client's home and helping them within their home. So, yes. But that's an example of like a community client, very unique in a very real life, natural context, you know?
Yeah. Setting. It's helping this person navigate.
Yes.
What would they need to do in order to get that goal accomplished, right? And
yeah.
And you were there to be able to provide that support. And
right.
I just wish that would be more available, right? But our service would be more available because, as you know, I work with this similar population, mm-hmm. and it's the lack of resources that and access to those resources, right? Not even the lack of resources, because
right.
the resources are there. It's just how do folks navigate and find these resources, right? And connect with yeah. them and utilize it and even get there that day, right?
Right.
On top of all right. the other things that they're negotiating. Yeah. So that's where I feel our lens in kind of honing in, breaking things down. Mm-hmm. That's where it really comes into play, and really we're able to, you know, support by helping our clients come up with some realistic plans, right?
Right, right. And for some of these clients that we work with, you know, going out in the community can be very stressful and overstimulating, and there's just a lot going on. And so really trying to be mindful of finding a way to help them organize themselves before going, and I would say not limiting, but being aware of some potential challenges that they may face when they're out there, and just these preparatory, you know, steps. And then once you're there, you know, guiding them through that whole process. And then yeah. once they leave, guiding them through that process. And so
yes.
it's, that's why I say it's like true OT.
Yes, it sure is.
And I love it.
I believe that 100%. And yeah. it's very similar to what my typical day or typical session might yeah. look like with someone. as you were mentioning that, it reminded me of a walking group that we decided was important to have. Mm-hmm. And this walking group really just involved walking around in the neighborhood, right? And you yeah. would think, oh, that is so simple. They can do that on their own. You may want to think twice about that, because not everyone feels comfortable walking around South Central Los Angeles, number one, on their own. And number two, not everyone really feels comfortable going out there in a neighborhood that they're not too familiar with, because yeah. a lot of folks aren't from this area. Right. There are some right. who are, but, you know, LA sidewalks are also not like New York sidewalks. In fact, sometimes right. there's no sidewalk.
Yep.
Next thing you know, there's a car zooming by. So there's just all of these different elements that right. environmental elements that we take for granted. Right. So
yeah.
even a simple walking group was something that was popular. Also, it felt safe, right? Because
yes.
we were all doing it in community. And we had a plan, kind of strategically plotted out. Okay, we're going here. We got lost too, but it's okay. We got lost together. we problem solved and, you know, found our way back and
yeah.
survived, right? So
oh
there's
goodness.
Something that, and it became kind of a popular thing. So we just
nice.
Keep doing it now.
Nice.
With a different destination each time.
That's hilarious. One of the first OT groups that I observed, because we'll also do groups at the shelter as well. And one of the first groups that I was able to kind of observe was a walking group, but it was like a mindful, you know, walking activity. And they were supposed to, we had like, it was almost like a scavenger hunt.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, they had to hear for like a barking dog or see something yellow or
mm-hmm.
you know, just all these different things, and it's an adventure. I'm telling you, the walking groups are definitely an adventure, even with like, you know, something to kind of pay attention to, but it's just so fun to be able to do that in community. like in that social setting with a group and peers, and you get lost, you all get lost, you know what I mean? So it's like, but everyone's together. And it's just an experience. And for some people, this is the first time they're ever doing it. And so there's this novel task that you're all doing together, and it's, you know, it serves its purpose.
I find that in the work that we commonly do, there's a lot of community building, mm-hmm. and that community building leads to a lot of meaningful activities in the end, right? I see a lot of folks kind of coming together, people who enjoy singing, you know, they come, you know, they come together, and we do lots of karaoke groups, we have talent shows and performances, and these are all community building things, and so important, because a lot of the folks that we serve have not been in community, have not been part of community. So a lot I find are starving for that kind of interaction, and some are ready just to go out there and take a walk, right? Yeah. And some are ready to belt out a song. But whatever capacity, we try to make that kind of activity, or, you know, occupation-based activity available.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's so important to even have that option. You know, some people are even, you know, hesitant. They're, you know, suspicious or not trusting. Mm-hmm. And so helping them, you know, build those skills and build that trust. So even within the smaller community, sometimes it helps. I appreciate that. Yeah.
Oh, well, thanks for sharing some of the fun things that you do at work. I say fun because I find
it is fun. More,
you know, I it is yeah, fun. I love being out there in the community. I love being out there on the bus with a client. I love being out there, you know, I don't know, going to the bank or something, or trying to just get things done, right? And helping them figure out the best way. Yeah.
Yes. Real life situations. This is natural context. This is the best place where you can, you know, for many of our clients, it's the best place to really provide the services. You know, I think it sure is. Inpatient and within, you know, clinics and hospitals, it has its space and its role, and it's beneficial for many different things, but something about the natural context, I think, is just, you just can't beat it.
Yeah. And we need to be out there in the community, right? After folks are discharged, when there's no longer supports out there for them, right? Mm-hmm. It's to help them kind of bridge that gap. So I'm not sure if we talked about this, and you may have mentioned already, but, you know, we were talking about this type of work and how meaningful it is for you and I. Was there anything in particular that inspired you to do this type of work?
Let's see. I'm like, there's several different things. I've been living in this community or in this county, I should say, for over 15 years. And I have seen the homeless population, I mean, probably like triple over the past few years. And I know, I mean, growing up, we weren't, at some point, you know, my family experienced being unhoused and having to live with other, you know, friends and family friends, and it's hard. And so seeing people that are unhoused, and, you know, you never know their stories of how they got to that point. And it's just a very sensitive population that I'm super protective over, and really think it's important that we help and support, especially in this country. I don't know, part of me feels like homelessness should not even be a thing in America, but it is. And you know, you just really never know what attributed to this individual being unhoused. And so I'm super passionate about this population, and very protective, and mental health. And then this population, I think, was a very easy kind of segue for me to kind of go into.
Well, thanks for sharing some of that. I couldn't agree more. I think, you know, we can really play a giant role in helping folks, again, access those resources, right? Without resources, It's very hard to get out of a situation or start something different, right? Or in some of these family dynamics that we're talking about. So having an ally, right? Having an ally that's going to help you navigate through all of that at this particular time or at, you know, in that level of care, I think is missing. But to focus on the positive, I think, you know, having conversations with OTs like you and a few others out there here in LA County and how we're all working with the same population, it's making me feel a little bit more hopeful in the fact that people's eyes are opening, right? People are seeing the light in terms of the value.
Come to the OT world.
And the value that we have to offer, especially this particular population. I mean, yes, for many, many others out there, but particularly this one, and it also being a major sort of societal problem, not just in Los Angeles, but all throughout the country right now.
Throughout the country, for sure. Yeah, I agree.
So your work is dearly needed. And I'm just excited that we get to geek out about some of the things that we do that are similar.
I feel like a little OT nerd. I'm like, this is the best. This is, and I could talk about it all day.
So on that note, maybe we can pick up the pace a little bit and talk about some successes and positives, right? Or maybe if you want to start with some challenges and then end us off with some recent successes that you may have experienced in your current role.
I mean, I think some challenges is that, you know, because we are working with in a older population that, you know, there's a lot of habits that people get into, and it's hard to come out and break some of those habits and break out of some of those patterns. And so having clients that, you know, pass away, I would say is a challenge, or not being able to see any progress, I think sometimes can be a little bit challenging. And it's just because, you know, the symptomology or their habits are just, you know, taking over. And there really isn't much that we can do in that sense, but, you know, we still make ourselves available and, you know, try to help as best as we can. And that's as best as we can do. And it's better than doing nothing. Right.
So,
but I would say that would probably be the bigger challenges. And the huge success is still, I would say my recent high is still having my client get that haircut and just seeing how dramatically different their affect was after from before and after. It's just like night and day. So simple things like that we take for granted always makes my day, always makes my day.
That's a giant win to me.
It is.
Giant win. It I had is. A similar like, experience.
If I leave now, I can leave happy. Like that was just, that's it. I did my job.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, just seeing clients feel successful, feel, you know, better about themselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, you know, even if it's just for a moment, you know, sometimes they don't even get that. And so if I can help them see their true potential or help them achieve or just start moving, making strides towards what they're truly capable of and they can see it, it's such a win for me. That's such a win. It means everything.
Yes. Well, you're doing tremendous work there and impacting so many lives and the things that you're doing.
Well, I feel super grateful. I also get to work with some clients that only speak Spanish. And so then I get to speak Spanish too. And so that's always a success for me too. I'm like, yay, I can translate, you know, and there's just a difference in that rapport building too, when there's that familiarity in language or culture or race sometimes, yes, or ethnicity. There's comfort in that. And so I consider that a huge win as well, you know, yeah, when I can provide someone with that comfort.
It's that connection, right? I'm not a native Spanish speaker, but I'm Filipina. So there's a lot of Spaniard that's been ingrained in our culture.
Yes.
And I can get by with my Spanish and, you know, at the shelter or at the interim housing facility currently, mm-hmm, you have no idea how many Spanish speaking clients come and engage with me in Spanish, right?
Yeah.
Knowing all, I don't speak Spanish well.
But you're trying, and that's enough, yes, you know?
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, what's wrong with asking them to, yeah, come to group, right?
Yeah.
Join us in group. Tiene grupo en español ahora.
Uh-huh. They're like, oh, you Spanish? Okay, I'll come to group.
So yeah, I think that connection, right? That special connection. That's why it's also super important for us to be out there working with this population, because they're able to relate to us. We're able to relate to them. And this is a really great opportunity for OTs to, again, because folks are seeing the value, mm-hmm, that we have, particularly in how we can support these populations. And right, it just thrills me to know that you, alongside with four other OTs, are out there doing your, yes, thing.
Yes.
And you're serving a ton of folks over there, mm-hmm, in your program.
And love what we do. Love what we do.
We need to get everyone together as a group to, like, I don't know, do some kind of group conversation about
that.
This
would be so, that would be so good.
It'll probably be really be loud too.
It would. It'd be really loud.
But again, right? This is just a dream. It's a dream to have fellow OTs kind of doing very similar work, where for many years I really felt like this was not very common. So so thrilled to have you. So thank you for sharing some of those highs and some of those challenges. How do you, you know, because this is such an, I guess, still an emerging practice area, and even working with the unhoused or the homeless, now, mm-hmm, we're learning that there's also different categories, right? Like there's folks moving into permanent housing. There are folks who are moving into transitional or interim housing, right? Mm-hmm. Or moving right out of shelter. So there's all of these terms and all of these sort of differentiations and the types of programming. And I think ultimately it's funding, right?
Right.
Programs are structured based on the funding. So how do you continue to stay on top of, I don't know, all of this information, on top of the knowledge, on top of, just skills, so that you can be at your best when you're providing your services?
I mean, I think for sure a lot of it is, you know, leaning in into and on my peers, my colleagues. And everyone is really good about, you know, attending webinars or continuing education courses. And recently, mm-hmm, we had our organization hosted a mental health conference, and, you know, learning about the different roles of different providers within our communities, and, you know, housing assistance and vouchers and all of these different things that may be of a resource to our clients or impact our clients or be beneficial. Mm-hmm. So just being engaged in that way. And also, like I said, I think I'm a natural resourcer. So I naturally seek out information. And so whether it's learning a little bit more about mental health or trauma-informed care, or reading, I love reading books that talk about mental health, but also talk about occupational therapy. But so any opportunity that I get to really learn a little bit more about the population that I'm working with, then I do. So I mean, I'm always super, I feel like a little nerd when I talk about like neuroscience and neurology, and like, I love Dr. Gabor. I love the work by Dr. Perry. And just learning a little bit more and getting a little bit more well-rounded information to better serve the clients that I'm working with. I'm always seeking out that information. YouTube videos, connecting and networking with other OTs that are working in this space. So yeah, immersing myself, I would say.
That's great. Can you share with us a little bit about money matters? You know, that's also a common question. There's this idea that OTs who work in mental health, much less community mental health, are underpaid, or whatever the myths are that are out there. Can you share with us a little bit about your salary stuff, compensation, whatever you feel comfortable with, or how your services are also funded? Because I think that's also a big question for folks.
Yeah, I don't know too much about funding. So I feel like I don't know enough. I know that they rely heavily on funding and the work that we do and being able to get reimbursed for that. And some of the clients that we see, you know, we get compensated through Medi-Cal. Mm-hmm. But as far as pay goes, I'm part-time, but I do feel that my pay is comparable to OT pay in the area.
Mm-hmm.
Now, does that mean that I think I am getting paid the amount that I should be? No, but I also recognize that this is a nonprofit and I genuinely love the space that I'm working in, being in this space. You know, I work school-based and I easily could be making over six figures right now, but that is not the space that I want to work in. That is not the space where I feel fulfilled. And so I'm willing to get paid a little less to work in a space that I love.
Yeah.
But at some point that will change.
Yes.
the pay will change. But yeah.
You mentioned that you're working part-time. How many hours per week are you working?
So ideally 24 hours a week.
Okay.
But right now I'm also teaching part-time. So it's even less. So it's about 16 hours per week.
Okay. And then are you a 1099 worker?
Yes.
Okay,
got it.
Okay, very nice. So thank you for sharing that. That's always, you know, people always want to know, like, oh, how does she get paid?
It's a legitimate question.
Yeah, you know? Especially if you're thinking of, you know, again, bridging into this type of work, right? What can one expect? Yeah. So I appreciate you sharing.
Yeah, thank you. And knowing that, like, you know, not all nonprofits don't have funding, you know, some nonprofits have very good funding and pay absolutely very well, you know, so some people don't do any work with nonprofit because of that. They think that there just isn't money. So, you know, do your research.
Yeah, I completely agree. And, you know, also don't think bigger, I guess, right? Would be my advice. Like, think large. Don't just stop at nonprofits. I work for a private company who serves folks with mental health issues, right? They serve folks with substance abuse and mental health issues. That is their niche population. Mm-hmm. However, this is not a nonprofit. It's a private organization. Mm-hmm. So the funding source, is also different, right? So people think that, okay, if you're going to do community work, means you're working in nonprofit, not necessarily. So I think that's an important message.
That's
and
really
I kind
good
of
to know.
And I mentioned to you earlier, there's startups out there too that are, you know, they're blooming. So this is a really good time for us, particularly because of the value that we have to offer, right? And once that is coupled with, you know, package it up, present it to someone who's listening, right? And who has like some pull. I think that, you know, this is a really good time for us to start asserting ourselves and making ourselves known.
It really is. We have the skill set to do so. but I don't know. It's almost like we've, or historically have kind of conditioned ourselves to think that we are meant to work underneath someone or for someone. Yeah. And I think as time goes on, we're starting to see that that's why, like, why does that have to be the case? Yeah. You know, there's so much more that we can do and there's so much that we have to offer. So why does that have to be the case? And we're seeing just this evolution of just entrepreneurship and, you know, emerging areas and not all of these non-traditional spaces. And it's great. It's great.
It is. And it's working, right? And it's right. And it's serving people, right? So it's not like it's just serving one thing. It's serving, it has a ripple effect, in fact. So I love this direction that our profession is taking, the way we're going. And I hope that we continue to fuel that because it's the only way that we can, I believe, that we can save our profession. Yeah. We need to expand. We do need to expand. So I know we've already been spewing out all this advice, right? For other OT practitioners. Yeah. Is there anything else that you want to add? Any other advice for our listeners, for our followers who may be interested in, you know, again, following your footsteps?
Yeah, I know. I like what you said earlier about just kind of like expanding your mind and your thoughts around what is possible, you know, in this field or in your role as an occupational therapist. And so, you know, I always have a hard time when I hear someone that is burnt out, you know, and they want to completely leave the profession. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't understand burnout. I understand burnout, but the whole leaving the profession altogether, that's the part I don't understand. Cause I was burnt out at one point as well. So I get it, but I never wanted to leave occupational therapy. So, you know, if you're ever feeling like that, really kind of expand your thoughts and your ideas and look into what other people are doing, because there may be something out there that aligns with your interests that you can really, you know, integrate occupational therapy along with your passion. Yeah. And somebody might already be doing that. So just keep an open mind and think big. I'm always thinking big.
So I couldn't agree more, right? Yeah. And that whole looking outside of the box idea. Yes. I also can relate to what you're saying, but also feel very fortunate that I've never been in a position as an OT where I felt like, oh God, this is horrible. Like, oh, I'd rather do something else, right? Yeah. Those thoughts have never actually crossed my mind. And I feel very fortunate because I've also interacted with many OTs who just feel like, you know, but I've never worked in that kind of setting where I just really, really couldn't, you know, it's tough. Those settings are very tough. So the advice is to look outside of the box, right? Don't entirely rule out your OT experiences, because maybe that can be shifted. Maybe that can be applied, right? It's the same lens, but it can be applied with a different population, entirely different setting, and in the way that feels good for you, right? Because I think there's also that when you're creating your own entrepreneurial space or your own private practice, you have the liberty to create what it is that you want and to offer the services in the way that you want, obviously within ethical standards, but it's your show, right?
Right.
So there's something about that to me that's very exciting and something that, you know, should be looked forward to.
Yeah. What better opportunity or thing to do than combine your passion and OT? Like, it's just, I mean, I know people that there was someone who I had spoken with and they are super passionate about golf. They're golfers, and they found a way to combine occupational therapy and golfing, you know. And then there's Oh my goodness, I'm blanking on his name. He was on the panel that we were on, and he's a dancer.
Oh, Arnell, yes, yes, yes.
Arnell. And yes. You know, dancing in OT. Like,
yes.
I mean, there's just so many different ways in which we can integrate our passion in OT that I really, really like, you know, people that are like, I'm ready to leave OT. It just breaks my heart because it's like, I know you're passionate about something else.
Mm-hmm.
So how can we like bridge those two things? Or how can I connect you with someone who is, you know, like-minded or interested in the things that you're interested in pursuing or doing, to keep you in our profession?
Yeah. Yeah. And there's so many other skills that are transferable too, right? Because there's a lot of OTs who are also not doing clinical work, right? They might be doing something else. So the options are, there's options out there. And I think that's a really important reminder for some of our listeners who are feeling really burnt out or feeling like, you know what, I need to leave this profession. Maybe you don't have to. Maybe just make a shift, right?
Yeah.
And I think our episodes here really speak to how that's so possible.
It is super possible. It is super. And never feel like you have to make a shift. If you are happy where you are, if it's working for you, you're enjoying it, you love it, it works for yourself and all of the things that you value, like, that's amazing. Stick with it, you know?
Yeah.
I recently had someone that was like, I feel like I should be doing something else. I'm looking at another job because I've been here for years and I don't know. I feel like maybe I should be somewhere else. And they were thinking about shifting their, you know, to a different job. And I'm like, why? Is it working for you? Is it going to make it any better? You know, and probably not. The answer was no, it wouldn't make it any better for them. So they chose to stay. And I'm like, good, you know? And there's possibility for growth and promotion and, you know, development, program development, and that's what they wanted. So I'm like, why are you leaving?
And also, like,
I feel like I'm supposed to. And I'm like, no, don't do that.
Yeah. And like with our work, it's also, we can do a few different things, right? Like we can do this part-time, we can work at a SNF part-time, we can work at a school part-time and really kind of spice up your week.
Yeah.
And until you figure out, okay, where do I want to be? Or what am I passionate about? Because I think that's also a common question that I get. It's like, how do you hone in on your passion? Well, because,
that's,
you know,
a hard one.
It is. That's a hard one. It's a hard one.
I'm an adult and I still wonder sometimes, like, what am I super, super passionate about? You know, I know things that I love and I do a little bit of everything, but our profession allows us to do that. We have that option. You know, I'm able to teach part-time and I'm able to work part-time within the community.
So bingo, and I'm able to go you don't to have school, to pick, you know, you don't have like, to pick just one, right? You can have like a few different passions and that should be okay because there's this panic sometimes. It's like, I don't know what, you know, what should my specialty be?
I get the panic though. I get the panic because I'm always super panicky, but I get it. But it's true. You don't have to, it doesn't have to be one thing.
No.
Yeah.
Are there any common myths or misconceptions? Now, we already talked about a couple, but maybe your current role in community-based mental health.
I don't know if there's any common myths. I know one question that I get asked by students sometimes, and sometimes other OTs as well, is, you know, how is it working with this population? Is it safe? And there's, you know, sometimes there's a concern about safety and individuals that are unhoused. Like, are they mentally stable or, you know, and I think that's a myth that we need to kind of, or a misconception that we kind of need to, you know, remove that stigma from individuals who are unhoused and that safety aspect, because it's, I mean, I don't know. Listen, we all have mental health, right? And we all fall along a spectrum within mental health. Some days we have good days. Some days we have bad days. There are people that are housed, okay, that go on shooting rampages, right? And then there's people that are unhoused that might break into someone's house to get food or something like that. So, I mean, there's just, it's very hard for me to kind of hear of that because it's, you know, I don't want to associate stigma or connect stigma to individuals that are unhoused. And so I would say that's probably the biggest one. And I have never felt that my life was in immediate danger working with any of the clients. I mean, there are definitely times where I'm always just kind of more aware. And sometimes that's just me being within the community anyways. But nothing extra or beyond that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say that.
Well, that's great to hear. And I would have to also agree. I feel that my safety is no different. You know, my safety is not, is no different than if I were working in another setting, right? It doesn't really make a difference just because I'm there. Because I get asked that all the time too, like, oh, how could you work with this population? Aren't you afraid? And I say, actually, I am not. I'm there to support, and they see that, they know that. So I'm an ally. I'm an ally in many ways.
It's a little bit different, you know. And then also, you know, when you, because we're fortunate enough to work closely with this population, we learn so much about their history and some of the challenges that they face. And really, I think for me, it's just a different level of empathy that I have with this population. And so it's really important that we don't attach a stigma to, you know, individuals that are unhoused as far as, violence or this fear of safety, because this could be anybody. It doesn't have to be someone that's unhoused. So,
I agree. I find that, you know, just like any environment, obviously there's anxiety, right? There's fear. There's people may not feel safe, right? So there are these things that I think are just consistent with other settings too. So thanks for sharing some of that and demystifying, you know, some of that based on your experience, and for sharing with us the wealth of information that you have. If any of our listeners were interested in connecting and following you, being in touch, how do they do so, and how do we promote your work?
So I am available through social media, Instagram, Facebook, at Alondra La OT. And anytime people send me messages, I usually respond. I've mentored some people through, you know, people messaging me. And it's always great to connect with people. So I'm always open that way. And email is always fine. So Alondra La OT at Gmail. But social media is where kind of you'll see some of the stuff that I'm doing. I've been a little bit quiet on social media because of school and being in school, but I plan on revving that up a little bit. But there you'll get to see some of the stuff that I've done in the past and some of the things that I'm super passionate about within occupational therapy. So and recently I did a interview with Telemundo for Mental Health Awareness Month and the world of occupational therapy. And so those are things that you'll find on my platform. So feel free to check it out.
I love it. We're definitely going to list those on our show notes so everyone can check it out. I can't wait to see it, the Telemundo special that you did on OT.
Yeah, it's in Spanish because, of course, it's on Telemundo. So it's all in Spanish. But I had to try to I had to transcribe it earlier today. So I think I'm going to try and find a way to put that in somewhere in the chat, comment, something so people can see what I said. But yeah, absolutely. It was really great experience. First time interview only in Spanish. And of course it had to be on that platform. So no pressure, but hopefully one of many more to come. It is an honor to be able to speak Spanish and do an interview in Spanish.
So. Oh, well, thank you so much, Alondra, for the incredible work that you're doing, the impact that you're making in your community, and, you know, now also serving Spanish speaking community. I absolutely love the community based work that you're doing, and extra thanks for sharing with us how you got there, how you evolved as an OT, and sharing with us some of your valuable career advice.
Yes, thank you so much. Thank you. It's been a pleasure and honor. And like I said, I could talk forever and ever and ever about OT. So
well,
I'm here if anything.
We need to have you back on with the rest of your team over there, the Mental Health Association.
Oh my gosh.
I want other OTs to learn more about this team and
they would work that love you're doing. That. They would love that. They would love
Let's
that.
Let's make it happen.
Oh my gosh. I'm going to tell them tomorrow. They're going to be like, what? Yes.
So thank you again.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. It's such a pleasure.
And that wraps up another inspiring episode of the Uncommon OT series. Connect with me at www.transitionsot.com. And don't forget to sign up to be part of the Transitions OT community. By doing so, you'll receive my latest compiled list of Uncommon OT practice settings, the latest news on mentoring offerings, Uncommon OT live events, non-traditional OT resources, and more. You may also follow me on my social media pages on Instagram and LinkedIn. And if you love this episode, head on over to Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, and Google Podcasts to follow, rate, and leave a review. I also ask you to consider pledging your support to my passion podcast project by being a patron on Patreon. It is very much appreciated. Sending big OT love. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.